I would like to read with you, please, in the book of Numbers. Please. The book of Numbers in chapter 32. Numbers chapter 32. Numbers chapter 32 and verse number 1. Numbers 32 and verse number 1 says, "Now the children of Reuben and the children of Gad had a very great multitude of cattle. And when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that behold, the place was a place for cattle, the children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spake to Moses and to Eleazar the priest and unto the princes of the congregation, saying, Ataroth and Dibon and Jazer and Nimrah and Heshbon and Elealeh and Shebam and Nebo and beyond, even the country which the Lord smote before the congregation of Israel, is a land for cattle, and thy servants have cattle. Wherefore said they, If we have found grace in thy sight, let this land be given unto thy servants for a possession, and bring us not over Jordan. And Moses said unto the children of Gad and to the children of Reuben, Shall your brethren go to war, and shall ye sit here? And wherefore discourage ye the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord hath given them? Thus did your fathers when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up unto the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the heart of the children of Israel, that they should not go into the land which the Lord had given them. And the Lord's anger was kindled the same time, and he sware, saying, Surely none of the men that came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me. Save Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite, and Joshua the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord. And the Lord's anger was kindled against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years, until all the generation that had done evil in the sight of the Lord was consumed. And behold, ye are risen up in your father's stead, an increase of sinful men, to augment yet the fierce anger of the Lord toward Israel. For if ye turn away from after him, he will yet again leave them in the wilderness, and ye shall destroy all this people. And they came near unto him and said, We will build sheepfolds here for our cattle, and cities for our little ones, but we ourselves will go ready armed before the children of Israel until we have brought them unto their place. And our little ones shall dwell in the fenced cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return unto our houses until the children of Israel have inherited every man his inheritance. For we will not inherit with them on yonder side Jordan or forward, because our inheritance has fallen to us on this side Jordan eastward. And Moses said unto them, If ye will do this thing, if ye will go armed before the Lord to war, and will go all of you armed over Jordan before the Lord until he hath driven out his enemies from before him, and the land be subdued before the Lord, then afterward ye shall return and be guiltless before the Lord and before Israel. In this land shall be your possession before the Lord. But if ye will not do so, behold, ye have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. Now, verse 25 says, the children of Gad and the children of Reuben spake to Moses. They say, Thy servants will do as my Lord commandeth. Verse 27, Thy servants will pass over, every man armed for war, before the Lord to battle. And verse number 31, they continue saying, As the Lord hath said unto thy servants, so will we do. We'll pass over armed before the Lord into the land of Canaan, that the possession of our inheritance on this side Jordan may be ours. And so Moses consents to that, and that'll suffice, I think, for our reading with the Lord's blessing at this point. I guess you could put in summary over my little thoughts that I would like to share with you for a few minutes now is plan A or plan B. And so I think that's what we have here is a situation where you have an original plan that God had in mind. And I think that this was something also that Moses was also already adhering to and thinking in his mind. And that was that these two and one half tribes of Israel would not be separate, but they would also be part of the whole contingent of Israel that would go into the land. I want you to notice here at the beginning of this passage, I think we have a little key or a little clue perhaps. And I don't want to be guilty of reading into it. And I don't want more than is there. And I don't want to be, I know that there is some divided opinion as to how this passage of Scripture should be used. But I'm just going to, apart from how there might be difference of opinion, I just think that there are some lessons here. And some that I think are even native in the mind of Moses as he seeks to appeal and seeks to reason with these people. But let's take a look and we'll just trace over it and see if we can learn anything from it. I think the first thing that we notice is that sometimes the choice of a career in life and prosperity in terms of our secular or our career can actually compromise us spiritually speaking. Here in verse number one, it says they had a very great multitude of cattle. And there's nothing wrong with being prosperous. There's nothing wrong with the blessing of God of prosperity in a person's life, either then or in the day in which we are living. But sometimes it takes a steady hand to carry a full cup. And here is something that is part of the motive for these people here devising and coming up with plan B. Sometimes people that are in business, they're entrepreneurial, they're fast on their feet, they come up with, they're very creative, and they're very thinking, and here is these people, and they take a look at the situation, and they took a look at what would be advantageous for them, and so they come up with plan B, and plan B is to stay and settle on this side of the River Jordan instead of going across the River Jordan into the promised land. I think that is an interesting situation. It sometimes would beg the question, although it's hard to say just what was involved, but it does raise not only the problems sometimes with prosperity, but also the puzzle here as to why or how they had so much cattle and why something similar is not said about the other tribes. I think we're aware that perhaps there is a need for sacrifice, many sacrifices that were made, but I don't know if that's really the reason why, whether or not because of maybe being less than diligent, being delinquent in terms of their duties, in terms of their sacrifices, maybe there was something, there was a shortfall on that side of the tracks, and that's why there is now a situation in which there is such abundance. I don't really know for sure. Be it what it might be, I think it's interesting that there is an amazing proposal that follows in verses 2 to 5. I think that it's amazing. It amazed Moses. It amazes me. I don't know if it amazes you, but I think that it's especially amazing because their proposal in verse number five, it says, "Wherefore said they, if we have found grace in thy sight, let this land be given unto thy servants for a possession, and bring us not over Jordan." Now, just if you'll allow me the license and liberty to apply and lift a little lesson here, I think that it's interesting that what was punishment for an entire first generation, and what was part of discipline in terms of even Moses and Aaron, you're not going to get into the land, actually becomes a personal petition and preference that is embraced by these two tribes. Now, if that doesn't boggle your mind, then I don't know. I'm really out of sync. I'm really out of touch. I don't understand what's going on. But it boggles my mind that something that was so damaging and so negative, and something that was the heavy hand of consequence for disobedience and unbelief in the experience of others in the same nation, is something that they say, we'd like that, please. Can you give that to us? I'm just going, what? How can you justify that? How can you explain that? I can't explain that. But be it what it is, I find, be it what it might be it what it may, I find that they have come up now with plan B. I would think that there is a necessity, a need for caution, just a little cautionary note, that it is somewhat precarious, and it is somewhat questionable for you and I to try to second-guess God, to try to come up with plan B, some alternative to what God has placed and put in his plan, in our path for him, for his glory. So this is what they are doing. So what was punishment for others is a preference for them. What was arbitrarily imposed is now voluntarily self-imposed. What was affliction and suffering for others is seen as pure advantage for them. It's definitely to be preferred. And I want you to notice something else, is that it appears here as they come and they are going to lobby with Moses for this particular concession, that it seems to me that they are also asking permission, apparently. Asking permission. But what I actually think is that while they might be asking for permission, they are certainly not asking for any kind of dialogue or discussion about the merits or the demerits of their proposal. That what they have got before their minds is something that they are completely convinced about. Their mind is made up. Please do not confuse them with the facts. So that's an interesting situation. That sometimes there is a little overkill in our self-will when it comes to looking for an alternative plan before the Lord. When it comes to concocting plan B as opposed to plan A. Plan A, to go into the land. Plan B is to stay on this side of the River Jordan. Now, I want you to notice the protests of Moses in verses 6 to 15. I think you could put over those verses, 6 to 15, I think you could put the word what, only you would have to put the letter A in that word several times. It's like he's saying, what? You know, you have got to be kidding me. I can't understand this. What side of the tracks are you coming from? What world are you actually living on in? What planet are you from? Do you not understand what is going on here? Do you not understand that we are coming to the crossroads? We are at the very launch pad for going into this great enterprise that God has promised us. It's taken us a long time to get here. It's cost a lot of lives. There has been a lot of tragedy, a lot of suffering along the way. And after all this time, and after all of the grief and the heartbreak and the difficulties of the journey, you guys are now saying, we'll pass. And so there he is. He begins to argue with them. He makes an impassioned plea. He says, your proposal is preposterous and it's mind-boggling. Mike, can you catch the color of the face of this 120-year-old man? Doesn't seem like he was sitting calmly. I think there was a little color to his face. I don't know if his beard was shaking. I don't know if his hands were trembling. But I imagine his eyes were nearly bugging out of their sockets. And he's looking at these people. And there's the princes that are surrounding him. And I think the first thing he says is your proposal is actually, first of all, very self-centered. He says, are your brethren, in verse number 6, going to go to war and you are going to sit here? So you're going to take a vacation. Life is going to be a party for you while the rest of us are going to go over there. And we're going to risk life and limb while you lads are sitting here tending to your herds. And you guys are going to be making money and living your life settled down and everything calm and controlled while the rest of us are battling for our lives. So he says, somehow I suspect here a little tinge of selfishness. And then he says, I want you to notice in verse number 7, there is also a potential for contagion. This could become contagious. And he says, wherefore discourage ye the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord hath given them? This is something that if it comes to the ears of other people, they might also jump on the bandwagon and say, hey, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. Oh, that's a lot easier. Well, the Lord's already given us victory and we're over here. And just think, whoa, we wouldn't have to worry about crossing that River Jordan. We don't have to worry about those great big giants over there. This will make a piece of cake. It's an easier path for us. Of course. So it's a risk of contagiousness, of influencing others in a wrong direction. And actually, those words were not far-fetched. Because before the discussion and the day is done, it's not just two tribes now, as it starts out with Reuben and Gad in verse number 1. It's 2.5 tribes, which has some, I think, lessons on its own. A half tribe. 2.5 tribes, Reuben and Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh. So obviously, they heard about it. At least they're not here in the first and the frontispiece of this chapter. So therefore, there is others that are coming into it and catching on to it, and it is contagious. And they caught it too. And then I want you to notice that he says to them, it's not very mindful. It's actually a forgetfulness that is here. Verse number 8 says, thus did your fathers when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. And when they went up to the valley of Ishkal, they saw the land. They came back with an evil report and discouraged the heart of the children of Israel that they shouldn't go into the land of Israel. And the Lord's anger was kindled. Don't you remember, gentlemen? Don't you remember what happened? God was not very happy with the whole situation. And God imposed this great restriction of so many of them that are not, that were, and so if this whole thing could self-repeat, we need to be mindful of the past. You know, one of the easiest things you can do is learn from the mistakes of others. Can't you look back and learn from the mistakes of others? Wasn't that the whole point of the Berenstain Bears, the bike lesson?
It's not in numbers.
No. But I'm not an expert. So here it is. You know, he's brought home this new bike, you know. You're going to like, I can't say it word for word, you know, but I read it quite a few times with the kids, you know. I don't know if they read those books now with the kids or not, but anyways, I always like that one about the bike lesson, you know. And there's the bike, you know, no. First come the rules and then come the fun, okay, you know. So the first thing is, you know, Papa Bear gets up on the bike and, this, you know, Little Bear is watching and Mama Bear's up the stairs there. And, the next picture, kaboom, you know. The first lesson is how to get on the bike, you know. But Papa Bear doesn't know how to ride the bike either. But he's like a little kid and he's wanting, that's the whole point, he's actually wanting to do it, you know. And Little Bear keeps running along, can I please, that was a good lesson for me. I see, Dad, that was a good lesson for me, you know. Can I ride it, please? No, another lesson. Anyways, I forget exactly at what point, at what lesson, but, you know, after a while, you see Father Bear, and he's standing up, and he's saying, let that be a very good lesson for you, my son. That is how it should not be done. You know, that's what Moses is saying. Hey, gentlemen, don't you remember your fathers? You know, hey, you bunch of little bears, don't you remember Papa Bear? Don't you remember what all they did back there? That was to be a lesson as to how it's not to be done. So don't repeat it. Learn from the lessons of others. Learn from the lessons of the past. History doesn't need to repeat itself. You are not fated to failure. You are not fated to defeat and to this kind of mistake. So I think that Moses is reasoning with them with great passion, with great earnestness. And it's interesting, I think, how that he appeals to them on all of this. But then I think we come to a little bit further. And verses number 16 to 19 are going to take us into a section that I've called the problems of Plan B. And that is this. Verse number 16, it says, well, listen, we're going to build sheepfolds for our cattle, cities for our little ones, and we're going to put everything in place, and then we're going to actually go with you. The soldiers, we're going to go ready armed. And guess what? We're going to go with you, and we're going to go over there, and we'll fight the Lord's battles with you. But please, whatever you do, don't oblige us to go over there. We really want us to hear. Now, what would you think? Does that sound like things are getting easier or things are getting tougher? It's very hard to reinvent the wheel, spiritually speaking, without it being a little more complicated, without it being a little more costly, without it being a little more confusing. And so Moses relents, and he consents to it, and they're going to go. And he pledges them to a pact. And the famous verse we normally give to children and apply in Sunday school, if you don't go over there and fulfill the promise that you're making, then you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. It'll catch up to you. We swear to do it. We are going to go. We're true to our word. We are honorable men. Coming up with Plan B, we're not satisfied with God's original plan, Plan A. But we do have Plan B, but we're going to help the rest of you that want to go with Plan A
We don't have, you know what? Everything's good. It's all relative. Your interpretation of God's will is that. My interpretation of God's will is this. And even though they're different interpretations, they're both right at the same time. So we're all good. It's all good. We need to, it's all in the same mix.
So here they are. So they've got to make preparations. They're going to leave the family and their children vulnerable to enemies around them. They're going to leave their herds. They're going to go over there. They don't know how much time it's going to take. They don't know that they're going to be over there 7 years before they're going to see their wives and their children again. All the hassle, all the pressure, all the difficulty. Listen, I can almost hear one of the women stepping up and saying, "Oh, but honey, you know, think of our marriage. Think of the kids. Like, is this really a good idea, gentlemen?"
No.
It's going to cost them time. It's going to cost them more work. And it seems to me that I know this is maybe you might think this is too big of a stretch, but down the line, what's going to happen is because of this plan B to settle on this side of Jordan and not go into the promised land, ultimately, 2 Kings, I believe it is chapter 9, tells us that when the marauding bands of the Assyrians are going to sweep down out of the north and they are going to come down to attack Israel, who is going to be the first ones that are going to be carried away captive? It's these ones on this side. This 2.5 tribes, plan B is going to cost them in the immediate because of extra stress, hassle for the family. It's going to cause them pressure. They're in a hurry because the rest are waiting. So they've got to build the houses and the pens for their cattle. And then it's going to cost them time-wise, 7 years. And I think it's going to cost them ambition or motivation-wise. They're over there fighting for everybody else. And I think there's a limit as to how much you would really want to sacrifice for others. But over there they are. They're going to do that. And they're ignoring the factor of the time, 7 years. And they're ignoring the factor that down the line, there is going to be the enemy that's going to exploit and take advantage of their plan B. And who's going to suffer? And who is going to bear the loss? And who is going to bear the cost? It's going to be their own family. So I think there is a little bit of a lesson here. I don't know just totally how to apply all of this right now. I don't know what the promised land represents for you. But it would seem to me that the promised land, at the very least, represents the fulfillment of all that God has planned for every believer. It's progress to the max. It is coming into the full enjoyment of God's plan, His promise, His portion, His inheritance for you and for me. It's if you like, it's not only getting saved, that's a wonderful blessing, but now consequent and subsequent to that, it's baptism. Now, maybe there's someone here today and you've gotten saved. And maybe you've been saved for a number of years up until now. And for you, plan B has simply been this. Be saved, but don't do anything else. I'm not going to get baptized. Are you kidding me? No. No. So for some reason, you've got it all figured out. And you're not... And maybe there's someone else here. And as far as you're concerned, it's salvation and you've been baptized. But to come into the assembly, I don't think so. No. No. You? Are you kidding? What I know of them? What I've seen go on there? No, not a chance. So I don't know what all your different variations are. Different alternatives to God's plan that is unchanging and unwavering for you. But here it is. And here's people here. And I'm just going to ask you the question today. Maybe you're a single person, but you plan to get married someday, and then there's going to be a family. Are you thinking on the future of what those children are going to be inspired to do or not inspired to do on the basis of your example? Are you going to be happy that they will put stops, and they will put stays, and they will put diversions, and they will put detours, and they'll come up with plan A? No. Plan A is there. They'll come up with plan B. Or maybe they'll come up with plan C or plan D or I don't know how many different versions of it. Are you content? Listen today, if there's someone here and you've been bucking against the plan that God has in mind, clearly mapped out for you as a path forward to bring you into all the spiritual prosperity and blessings that you can possess in this world by His grace. And somehow you've been denying that,
You've been disobeying that. You've been wanting to look for a detour around that. Then I'm going to ask you today to think in terms of others around you. I'm going to ask you to think in terms of the unity of God's people. I am going to ask you to think in terms of time that can be lost. I'm going to ask you to think in terms of the exposure and vulnerability that oncoming children, oncoming generations can be exposed to unnecessarily because of your choice. And so there's the half tribe of Manasseh that comes along and joins in with them. Where's the other half? What happened to them? Not so easily convinced. Not so easily persuaded. It just tells me that, you know, not all of that tribe had their brain in neutral. So there's a situation that has come along. And even though it's going to separate them physically, and it's going to divide them, think about the complication about how they're going to go up to the feast now, living on this side of the River Jordan. So many complications. Clashing with the unity of God's people. Doesn't matter. We get the bit in our teeth, we're going to run with it. And it doesn't matter what anybody says, we've got our mind already made up. But you know what I like? And I'm going to close with this. I like the point of contrast. There's the other half of the tribe of Manasseh. And they hear this. And I don't know like how they figured it out. Okay, you go over there with them. I'm staying over here. You know, you go. I don't know if they had a vote. I don't know if they said, okay, everybody raise their hand. It's going to stay over here with Reuben and Gad. All right, you guys over there. Okay. I don't know if they had some kind of a discussion. What? You know. Obviously, unity was not the biggest issue on the table. But there's also another little point of contrast that comes out of all of this. For some reason, there was 5 women. And you already know who they are, right? Daughters of Zelophehad. Zelophehad, I don't know how you pronounce his name. And there, that's found in chapter 27. Numbers chapter 27. And you know what? They hold a little consultation with Moses. And they come up to him, and if you want to come over to it, Numbers chapter 27, I've got 3 minutes. And they stand before Moses in verse number 2 and before Eleazar the priest. And before the princes and all the congregation. It's interesting, by the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And it says, they then say, our father died in the wilderness. Now, he wasn't one of the worst. He was not in the company of them that gathered themselves together against the Lord in the company of Korah. But he did die in his own sin. And he had no sons. Such is the coherency and the clarity of thinking of these daughters that the relationship of blood, of flesh and blood, didn't blind them to the failures of their own father. They're not defending his sin. They're not defending his past. They're not there to lodge a complaint about that. But what they are seeking to do is that even though he had failed, and even though he had sinned, somehow they had caught something of maybe a spirit that he himself had eventually caught. And that is, if God says it, we want to do it. Lock, stock, and barrel. Now he's got no one, no inheritance to raise up his name. And so that's what they asked for. We're women. Well, we're just asking if you could give us an inheritance on the side of Jordan with Reuben and Gad. Not on your life. Our father might have died over there. Reuben and Gad might be content to go over there. Half of our own tribe has already decided to go over there. But we actually have our own personal conviction before the Lord. We are totally convinced about plan A. We want nothing to do with plan B. And so we're asking if our situation, unique, couldn't be taken into consideration. And they bring it before the Lord. And the faith of these women. And the fortitude of these women. And the focus of these women is honored. And the portion is granted to them. Isn't that a wonderful lesson? I kind of like their strength of character, their fortitude. They're willing to buck the trend in a good way. They're not mindlessly going to go with the flow. They're thinking. They've got convictions. They're anxious to please the Lord. They're thinking of their own future. And they're asking for an inheritance on the right side of the River Jordan. The needs are wide and varied across the audience here today. May the Lord help each of us to be 100% convinced and 100% committed that if God says it, then that's the only plan that I want to have fulfilled in my life for God's glory, for the blessing of my family, and for the honor of the assembly of being gathered to the name of the Lord Jesus. May God bless his word to all our hearts.
Amen. Let's read now in the book of Hebrews.